This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Today I'm very excited because this guest has been incredible. Every time we've spoken, and now she's joining us fortnightly, Associate Professor Teresa Larkin from the University of Wollongong is back, and we're talking blood and bone. You might be sprinkling it in the garden this spring or seeing skeletons of fake blood in shop windows for Halloween. But why do blood and bone go together so naturally? And what's the science behind their real life connection? Teresa, welcome to Drive. Welcome to the Drive team.
Thank you. I know, I'm very excited. Regular spot now.
I know. We're thrilled to have you. Now most of us think of blood and bone as total opposites. One's liquid, one's solid. How are they actually linked inside us?
Yeah, so they're both from the same original tissue layer when we were just a three-layered embryo.
Oh.
So originally when we were three layers, well, we actually start as two layers of cells. It's the outer layer, which ends up becoming our skin and also making the nerves. And the innermost layer are the linings, you know, the linings of our digestive tract. The middle layer is where everything else comes from. So muscles, fat, organs, but also our blood and bone. So they're both what's called connective tissue. So yeah, they came from the same original layers to begin with. And when we think of bones, we often think of, you know, just the support systems for the body, mechanical, protecting the organs. But actually, they produce all of the blood and immune cells in the bone marrow. So the bones are actually the source of all of the cells that are in our blood.
So we start off like a lasagna, in a way, like just layers.
Oh my gosh, I've never thought of it actually as the layers, you're right. And even this is the mincy layer because it's kind of got bits, it's organ, it's muscle, it's bone, it's the blood. Sorry, anyone who normally eats a vegetarian lasagna. Yeah.
Now, so in terms of that, when we're kids, our bones are doing a different job to say when we're adults, is that right?
Yeah, the bone marrow has different functions, or it's kind of active in different bones. So yeah, the blood cells are produced in the bone marrow. And often when we hear bone marrow, we think of the long bones and, you know, even in terms of the bones that are part of meat that people eat. And so the bone marrow is in the middle part of the long bones. So for example, our thigh and our arm. And so during childhood, up until we're about hit puberty, pretty much all of the skeleton will produce blood cells, and then and high amounts in the bone marrow. So that red bone marrow is when we've got actively production of red blood cells. But actually in adults, the main places that we still continue to produce those blood cells are only in the flatter bones. So the pelvis, the vertebrae in the back, the ribs, the sternum, and the skull. And so we still do have bone marrow in our long bones, but it's called white bone marrow because it's actually then been infiltrated and replaced with a lot of fat cells. So the white bone marrow is really just fat cells.
So it doesn't really do much, the white bone marrow?
No, it doesn't. So it was previously red bone marrow, so it was previously active producing those red blood cells. And then as we age, that just dies out in those bones and really becomes focused in the flat bones. So I guess when people might have heard about, you know, bone marrow donations, you can actually do that now by even just giving blood. So they can essentially take blood out of a person, filter it, get the plasma cells, the stem cells, basically. So these blood cells that are being produced in the bones, they're essentially stem cells. And they can filter out the stem cells but put the rest of the blood back into that person. But the traditional way of getting a bone marrow transplant was going into someone's hip bone and taking it out of their hip bone because, yeah, in adults it's only really the hips, the rib cage and the sternum, which is the breastbone. But the skull, interestingly, there was some recent research showing that the blood cell production in our skull bones is really important as we age. So our head is active, you know, even if the brain's going through some negative changes, the bones there are still producing our blood cells.
And all the more reason to protect our head. We're chatting with Associate Professor Teresa Larkin from the University of Wollongong about how blood and bones are more closely connected than we may think. Now, Teresa, just on the donation side, when we do donate blood or plasma, what's going on inside in terms of how the body replaces what we've given away?
Yeah, really interesting. And it's different between whether it is full blood or just the plasma. So red blood cells, they have a normal lifespan of around 120 days. So when there's new production of those blood cells, they replace pretty much 1% of the total of red blood cells every day. So every day we're replacing around 1%.
Right.
And then they've got a lifespan of 120 days. They end up being broken down and they're removed by the spleen. They're even excreted in urine and feces. So you might have heard about things like bilirubin. So bilirubin is actually a breakdown of part of the blood. So yeah, that just gets moved through the spleen, liver, and excreted in the bile, comes out, some of it comes out in our feces. And so because of that lifespan, if you're donating whole blood, then you can usually donate that every 12 weeks or so, because that's enough time for the body to regenerate enough blood cells that have been lost in that time. If you donate plasma, it's only around 2 weeks. Because interestingly, plasma is the water liquid component of the blood. Mm-hmm. So plasma is about half of the amount of blood and the cells are the rest. So it's, you know, about half of our liquid flowing around is actually made up of cells, and you can see those quite solidly. When you spin a blood sample, the cells will go to the bottom and the watery plasma goes to the top. But plasma is actually just made purely from water and salts that we drink and eat. So it's not produced by any organs. So with a plasma donation, it's essentially just, you know, all you need is the time it takes to reabsorb that amount of water and salts.
While we're on healing, if someone breaks a bone, what happens during, I suppose, the healing process? How does the body know, hey, you know what, I broke my bone, it needs to repair? How does it know?
Oh, all of those things are so interesting, aren't they? The signals that get given and when tissues know, when they're stimulated to grow a little bit more. So, yeah, that's right. So our bones are meant to withstand forces along the length of them because, you know, we're always we're designed to be standing and having gravity go against us. And gravity is really good for our bones. So we've got strong bones in terms of along their length, so from the top to the bottom, but along the side, they are not very strong. And that's often how a bone will break, you know, if there's been a blow to the side of the leg or the arm or whatever it is. And so when a bone is broken, one of the risks of it is actually tearing the blood vessels that encircle them, because the bone has got this strong blood supply. You know, the blood's going in to rebuild bone and it's coming out with the blood cells. So one of the problems with breaking those long bones, like in the arm or at the hip, is tearing the blood vessels and having too much blood, you know, blood loss. But then those same vessels are also really important for the remodeling. So when bone is broken, it will have signals to literally say, increase your bone cell production.
Oh, wow.
Because bone's constantly being rebuilt. So we're rebuilding around 10% a year in adults. Really interesting is that estrogen and testosterone, they're both really important signals for remodeling that bone and having new bone cells grow and the old ones disintegrate. And that's why as we age and our estrogen and testosterone lowers, there is an increased risk of osteoporosis and bone breakage.
So exercise is also important?
Definitely important. Yep, it's one of those use it or lose it, really. Mm-hmm. And the best thing is weight-bearing exercise, so anything against gravity, so that we're, you know, standing, doing resistance training. You know, sometimes there's a bit of a sort of discussion about how cycling and swimming, though they're good exercises for us in other ways, they're not really resistance training. So if we need to be doing exercises where we are lifting our body weight or lifting other weights against gravity. So yeah, really important gravity. And the opposite side of that is that astronauts, when they're up in zero gravity, they have a huge loss of bone mass. So their bones break down. So they say pretty much, so about 10% of the thigh bone can be lost during 6 months in space and can take years to recover. So they say that 6 months in space is the result of is the equivalent of about 20 years worth of bone density loss.
I mean, terrific.
It's a huge, it's sacrifice, huge, isn't it?
Do you know what? When we move into space, let's say we colonise some space, we're going to evolve into blobs with no bones.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll just be oozing around the place. A couple of messages came in saying interesting interview about blood and bone. A friend of mine is a bone researcher, scientist at St Vincent's Hospital. Fascinating. I found out more with this interview than my friend. There you go, Teresa.
And interesting, the link, like you say, between the blood and bone. Mm. So the blood in that, when we're fertilising, that gives nitrogen because there's lots of nitrogen in our blood because that's the breakdown of proteins. And the bone gives calcium and phosphorus because bone is a really big storage of our calcium and phosphate. So that's what we're doing in terms of the blood and bone fertilizer. We're giving those nutrients of nitrogen, calcium and phosphorus or phosphate.
All together. So I suppose finally, if we tie it all together, if any of us want to give our blood and bones a little boost this spring, what's one simple thing that we can do, Teresa?
Oh, it's a good question. So definitely the weight-bearing exercise or resistance exercise, the more that you can. And if someone's unable to stand or do exercise, you know, in that format, even just using those bands or seated exercises where you're lifting your legs up, things like that will help. In terms of the bone, also it's all about vitamin D and calcium. That's what we need to have good bone growth. And then blood, probably the main thing, because there's not a lot we can control with that, but is to stay hydrated.
Ah, of course. Teresa, I love having you on as a regular. Thank you so much. And we'll chat to you in a fortnight.
Yeah, see you then.
Thank you so much. That is Associate Professor Teresa Larkin from the University of Wollongong and the first of her new fortnightly chats with us here on Joy Drive.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.